Today is Equal Pay Day. It represents how far into a new year women need to work to earn what men earned in the previous year. According to the U.S. Labor Department, women earn 82% of what men do on average, so it's taken an extra 12 weeks of work in 2021 to catch up to male earnings in 2020 alone. One of the most outspoken advocates for closing this wage gap is Lilly Ledbetter. She was at the center of the 2007 Supreme Court decision that barred her from suing Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, which paid Ledbetter a fraction of what it paid her male colleagues. That decision led to the 2009 Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act that strengthened worker protections against pay discrimination. Lilly Ledbetter joins us now, along with Fatima Goss Graves, the president and CEO of the National Women's Law Center. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Lilly, I want to start with you and note that at the beginning of 2020, women had made some major gains in the workforce. In fact, they held more non-farm payroll jobs than men for just the second time in history. And that was expected to continue. And then the pandemic hit. And now women's unemployment is slightly higher than men's, and more women than men have dropped out of the workforce in the past year. So how are you reflecting on how the pandemic has hurt women economically over the past year?
The pandemic has really put a hold on the women's position in life where they had earned. And you're right that we had made a lot of gains in the positions that women was holding, but we've lost them. And so many women have lost their jobs. They've had to give up jobs, good jobs, to stay home with children and homeschool. I'm sure Fatima can share with you some statistics that show that we are so far behind. And I talk to women every day. They can't pay their rent. They can't buy food. These single mothers, they struggled before this, but now it's doubly hard.
Well, Fatima, as Lilly mentioned some of the statistics, if we dig in, I mean, we do see an impact for women across the board, but looking a little bit closer, we also see that Black and Latina women have been disproportionately hit by the pandemic, and the wage gap is even wider for them. In 2019, for example, Black women were paid 63% of what white men were paid, according to the Census Bureau, and the numbers are even wider for Latina women. So talk about the impact that this disparity has over the lifetimes for Black and Latina women.
That's right. You know, Black and Latino women entered this pandemic and this recession behind, right? Entered not with some nest egg built on being paid fair dignity wages over time, but really without a cushion to weather the storm. It's also the case that women, but more true Black and Latino women, are disproportionately frontline workers. Two out of three of frontline workers are women. But for Black women, one out of three who are working at all are working as frontline workers. And they've been hit hard by the job losses. And part of that is that they're disproportionately represented in some of the sectors that have been hit really hard, like hospitality and leisure. But a big part of that, as Lilly mentioned, is that we had a pandemic and an economic crisis, but we also had a care crisis. Our care infrastructure crumbled, and women bore the brunt of it.
You know, Lilly, during this pandemic period, we also lost the Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I want to ask you a little bit about her, because when the Supreme Court ruled against you in 2007, it was based on a technicality in the 1964 Civil Rights Act that limited discrimination claims to a 180-day period, and you had exceeded that window. And Justice Ginsburg issued a powerful dissent in that case. She wrote that, in our view, the court does not comprehend or is indifferent to the insidious way in which women can be victims of pay discrimination. And she urged Congress to act. And I'm wondering what that dissent from Justice Ginsburg meant to you.
That changed my life. Her dissent, it really, you know, when you lose a case as big as I lost in the Supreme Court after having won in the lower federal court, when that verdict came out in my case in the lower federal court, I thought, this is sending a message that the other corporations will get the message. They'll start doing better. But of course, when I lost then in the Supreme Court and she read that dissent, that changed my life. It gave me the dignity to hold my shoulders high and my head back and to go forward. It was about what was right for the future generations. So when the media started calling, I invited them into my home and I did news program after news program, because it is critical that women are paid what they're rightfully earning, because it's not only their support for their family today and tomorrow, but it's their retirement.
Yeah, the legacy of that pay discrimination continues long after the fact, right? Yeah. And we know, Lily, that the story didn't end with that Supreme Court case. And as Justice Ginsburg urged Congress to act, it did, in fact, passing the 2009 Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act that bears your name. And Fatima, I want to ask you about that because I know that you helped draft the legislation. And in fact, it was the first bill that President Obama signed into law when he took office. Now, it certainly hasn't solved the problem of the gender pay gap, as we were just reviewing the statistics, but it has narrowed it some. And I'm wondering what progress you have seen in the last decade or so since it was passed.
You know, it was critical that the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act get passed, and then frankly that it bared her name, because, you know, Lilly's story is so many stories. The big difference for Lilly is that she actually found out she was being paid less at the end of her career. Most people never know. But we had a real awakening in 2009. So since that time, we have seen more than a dozen states change their laws and improve the way people can fight back against pay discrimination. We have also seen executive orders come out of the Obama administration that made a giant difference, that told federal contractors you can't ban people from talking about their pay. And we have seen movement on what is called the Paycheck Fairness Act. We have not yet passed it, and I'd love to talk about that. We restored the law, but then we got to work to do some of the things that actually will make a difference in terms of pay discrimination.
Well, go ahead. Let's talk a bit about the Paycheck Fairness Act, because I know that you testified before Congress just last week in support of that bill. So for folks who aren't familiar, what's in it and why do you think it's important?
Yeah. So the Paycheck Fairness Act would make pay more transparent. So it allows people to talk about their wages. You can't be penalized if you want to talk about your pay. But it also requires employers to send their pay analysis to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. That is important because employers typically aren't going to send information that has a problem to the EEOC. So it allowed them to take a look and fix it, which is a thing too many employers aren't doing. So it changes the incentives so that employers hopefully will pay their employees correctly the first time.
Lily, you know, I think anybody who's listening can hear the passion in your voice as strong as ever, even at 82 years old. And I'm wondering what drives you to keep advocating and keep working so hard to end pay discrimination?
Because it's so desperately needed across this nation and actually around the world. You know, being from the Deep South, I thought in the beginning this must be a Southern problem. But I learned it's around the world, and I've heard so many stories that will just break your heart. Where people have, they do the work. They work long hours and they work hard. They may have worked 30 years, but yet they didn't get the pay. And that's why I'm so passionate about it. So many people are getting shortchanged. When John F. Kennedy signed equal pay in 1963, and then Johnson, President Johnson, signed Title VII in 1964, nobody adhere to those laws. Nobody was policing them and making sure those laws were being followed. Laws are great as long as people follow them. And if I might add, too, when we were walking the halls of Congress, the Republicans and the Democrats both supported the Ledbetter bill, and it became a law by both voting for it. And with Justice Ginsburg's dissent, it was passed in 18 months. And that's a record in my book for Washington.
Well, Lily, I really appreciate your sharing your story with us again after doing it so many times over the years. But I do have to ask you before we go about one more time, at least, that your story will be shared, which is in the upcoming movie that's going to tell your story. And we just learned this month that Emmy winner Patricia Clarkson is going to play you in that film. Are you excited about that?
Oh, I'm just over the moon, as they would say. I am so excited. This has been a dream of mine. And I'm so excited about this movie.
We're excited to see it, too. Lilly Ledbetter is an advocate for equal pay, for equal work. Thank you for your time. And thanks also to Fatima Goss-Graves, President and CEO of the National Women's Law Center. It was a treat to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.